Epic of the City of Tampa by yours truly, James E. Toakley Sr., Poet Laureate, Tampa, Florida. An ibis laughs, white feathered free, as a strange flock clamors on his shore. He stares intent, amusedly, at what he's never seen before. He rouses sleepy manatee, who moans in terror. Who but he? Who in turn lets alligator know, who snaps in response, it is not salt. But on the side of caution, and as a friend, old alligator approaches man and tries to tell the Timaquan and the Kalalusa what the ibis found. But mankind's words were cruel and sore. They mocked old gator's bellowing cries and warned him if he said much more, they'd threaten to poke out both his eyes so that he could not see the moon that swung like a lemur through the black lagoon. How dare a reptile that was known to ambush children on their way home or to gobble whatever he could see to sight ghost ships, wings wide as trees, and with bow-legged birds whose ibis faces certainly must have come from some nonsense place. Therefore, in 1542, no Timaquan nor Kalalusa saw or knew what madness was about to start in the middle of a swampland's muskeg heart, which would beat in the future to the pulse of a land reshaped by footprints in the sand. But let me not get ahead of myself, for the gray fox, wily, brown-eyed elf, had also spied this curious crew with scabby shins and flat-soled shoes, then saw what almost took his breath. A creature whose face was dark as death. Not bronze like the brawny Timaquan, but black like a morning with no sun. Yet a creature who talked like a duck, quack, quack, through his nose, yelled, "Esteban!" And the dark face rose to tower above the lighter fiend who gave an order to the one who was his slave. For the swamp fox hid to see it all, as Estevanico answered the call of Narvaez, who bid him make the first step that a man would take who was not brown on a Tampa shore, luring Ponce de Leon all the more like a faded moth to a purloined flame of eternal nonsense, myth, and shame. But the place called Tampa by the Timaquan, which meant land of smelly waters by the brave Kalusa clan, was christened by conquistadors. Henceforth, it would be known as Espiritu Tampa, Florida, a sacred New World home, a land of hammerheads and cormorants, of coral snakes and ducks that danced on water like the Savior did, a secret mallard ducks kept hid. Yet, someday, great steamships would sail from the sleepy waters of that beach, as tall as trees and long as whales, whose ports of call would prove to reach the cities of a world that had learned to say the name of a sleepy New World bay. Yet, once again, I've strayed too soon, too far away under distant moon. In time I'll speak prosperity, but for now I return to sawgrass leaves and old oak trees with rattlesnake bark, bobcats screaming in the dark, a thousand denizens who called home this place which had yet to become full grown. At first, a trickle, then a stream of old world beards with their new world schemes, a lust for gold by any means that might be met by sale or hue or bloodshed given the slightest cue. Yes, fortune was a constant dream in this new world wilderness of green and indescribable beauty lain in the midst of disillusion, death, and pain. Yet in time, another native breed called Seminole would plant its seed where cypress fringed in mistletoe as a dancer swaying life and slow. And Seminole braves would fight to be lords of the swampland, proud and free. And runaway slaves would become their friends in a mutual allegiance to the bitter end. So the Seminoles, numbers alas, would swell to contend the lost tribe of Israel. Here, Osceola and Share to Share would live beside the great swamp bear, whose love for berries and honeycomb could rival Osceola's own. That's Chief Osceola, who, in fact, loved Share to Share, though she was black. With eyes as brown as the white-tailed doe's, she would live with her husband, and their love would grow until one day white slavers came to drag her back to yoke and shame. But from their cruelty sprang a war that would spread from the swamp to the placid shore of Tampa Bay, where it would end with a question mark, for both victor and the vanquished would remain in the dark. But the legend of the Seminoles was just one book in a story told and retold well by Tampa sons, who spun their yarns with sweat and guns, and by Tampa daughters who gave birth to a woodland paradise on earth that would in time beget a line of statesmen forthright and refined. So, brave Seminoles had their say, as the Timaquan had done, then went their way, as the land they tended as their own was proven once again to have been on loan. Then was ceded to Americans who would save the best parts of Tampa for tobacco and slaves. Young James McKay would buy him a boat, for a while the finest ship afloat. Mascote, he called it, that would deal in tobacco and goods by paddle wheel. But when the war to free all slaves touched Tampa Bay, good Captain McKay and all his ships were put on hold till the war was done, and Tampa was told that slavery in our land was a dream of the South that had run out of steam. But McKay, who one day would be mayor of the city by the bay, saw brighter fare. For the end of the war was intertwined with cigar smoke to pass the time. From Cuba, cigar makers came where a man, Ybor, would make his fame. Worldwide he would, as lips would kiss his sweet cigars in a foggy mist. And James McKay, on an ocean's pitch, would sail his ships, which would make him rich. But McKay was not the only one to find a niche and make it done. A veteran of the Civil War, who'd come to Tampa once before, decided he would come again. And this time he would bring a train. Old Henry Plant, he had a dream of a hissing, spewing iron machine with wheels that ground like teeth to grit in a nightmare when one turns and twists, then wakes to a scream with eyes of flame. 'Twas a railroad that would bear his name. Yet, in case the world could not hear well, he built himself a grand hotel on the banks of the winding Hillsboro that let both prince and pauper know that Henry Plant had come to town, a place where paradise could be found. Indeed, a rumor for all to see was a fountain of youth by an old oak tree, with rattlesnake bark and roots like toes of an old man dressed in tattered clothes. Folks paid a quarter just to see what sent poor Potts to eternity. Yet Henry Plant, with his thousand lights, electric gleaming in the night, and his iron horses that would bring a discovery of Tampa by queens and kings and men like Churchill and Roosevelt, would sit on the veranda in the sweltering Tampa sun as they sought to kill time while in wait for San Juan Hill. On an isle where scheming Spaniards had destroyed an American ironclad. These were the years when Tampa seized momentum to rise up off its knees, to stand and stride as if it knew what future it was racing to. In Ybor City, every street kept steady pace to Latin feet and Italian, Sicilian, well-made hues, while African Americans brought the blues of the Southland mixed with an African past. And together this melting bowl would last until this day, with the finest brand of cigars made in any land or any time mankind has choked or dreamed in the midst of cigar smoke. But the African Americans who had built Henry Plant's hotel and under the wilting, unforgiving Tampa sun had unloaded the ships of McKay's Cuban Run, and who picked the oranges and what grew from a vine or a bush, barefoot or shoed, who minded the children who were not their own, they too withheld a secret that was theirs alone. Call it Central Avenue, or call it a promise that was overdue, a place where the promissory note of freedom and equality was known to float like perfume down a Tampa street where strutted in unison aching feet that wore brogans the day before, but Stacy Adams' shoes were what pharaohs wore, and Sunday black knees knelt to pray for the courage to face a future day wherein the spirit of a southern town would redeem itself as its walls came down. O children of a future time, if you ask the past what is on its mind, and it tells you, then would you believe or continue to think its words deceive you when it tells you about those times of Bolito games, high life and crime, of unmarked graves along a road who, if it could speak, it would explode. Like a garden blossoming unfound dead who were planted along a city road instead. Then came World Wars I and II. MacDill by the beach was a place that grew from a hideaway where lovers spooned to where B-27s navigated by the moon. But a city that once heard bobcats scream now thrilled to the howl of war machines and tractor trailers as they sailed with treasures once reserved for rail, and railroads pulled into Union Station, packed with passengers' expectations of a place where they could make a future life with few mistakes. And the forest grew, concrete and steel, with trees that rose a mountain high, and through asphalt fields of roses rode iron beasts with hooves of rubber wheels. Yet the trees no longer had the bark of rattlesnakes, but had eyes that sparkled in a noonday Tampa sun, 10 million eyes that blinked as one. The denizens of this new day would supplanted the swamp fox, who, if he could, would have asked quite plaintively how his feet might successfully cross an asphalt street. And in that space where used to walk the wide wings of the broad-winged hawk and eagle flies, whose feathered wings are sharp as the swords of warrior kings, and who screams in the night at the top of its voice to return to Tampa, a landing choice. Yet the city that we know is more than concrete, glass, and steel. is more than a place where wide streets flow like rivers, rushing brakes and wheels. Instead, it is a place where sleep at the end of a day commands its keep, a patchwork of communities where a house is its own sovereignty. And if a stranger ventured near, he'd say good folk resided here, good neighbors who were not afraid to be at peace with the lives they've made. Though downtown skylines can be seen, they don't obstruct the grassroots dreams of backyard folks who enjoy the view of Tampa skies and barbecue. And at night, a possum comes to play along the streets beside the bay. Black Snake decides he'll also keep late evenings when 'tis safe to creep. And feral cats, who once belonged to someone, sing a feline song, a blues song, only for those ears that tremble to a tune no person can hear. The alligator hears it all and beckons to the ibis, whose laughing call alerts poor manatee once again that the flowering of Tampa has yet to end. The horizon floats a rainbow sign in the south to Cuba, where once more a find of friendship looms like a morning sun, for the 21st century has just begun. With all the promises it conveys, like Spanish galleons riding on a westerly wave. And though the future is not known except by the architect alone, this much I know and promise you, our future is based on what we do and how we treat the least of us whose hearts and health are in our trust. Though our buildings reach to scrape the sky and our eagles copy angels' cries, what shall indeed propel this place to greatness is its love for the human race. We watch in truth, impending night, at the end of a day that has burned as bright as the lightsome gleam of a baby's smile, a light well seen from across the miles. From the tallest peak to the smallest shoe, our city bids the day adieu and opens its eyes from a kindred spark to become a diamond in the dark. And ibis laughs and tells his friends, this place called Tampa is a tale without an end. And I believe him, so I'll save the end of this story for another day. For I am like a wilderness bird. The love for my city is in my words.